So this is Vrindavan Mahimamrita. We're hearing about the Braja Raja Mahima, the glories of a particle of dust of Vrindavan. And now we're going to hear about the dust of Vrindavan is actually the shelter, the place of shelter of the greatest kings in the universe. Even they come here to take shelter of the sacred dust of Vrindavan. It's so special and so attractive and so valuable that even vast kingdoms and sovereignty over whole countries is not as attractive as shelter of Vrindavan. Prabhupada Saraswati mentions that in verse 58 of chapter 13. Mandatri pramukha gata nripatayo yesham yashubhya yajagat vyaptam burupi meru mandram sarvata ujvala amrita param vindashu vrindatavim. Just take shelter of that most effulgent nectarine abode of Vrindavan, whose mountain-like glories are spread throughout the universes, and whose dust particles are taken shelter of even by great kings like King Mandatta. Mandatta was a great king who lived across the river Yamuna in Keshigat, in Vrindavan, in the area of Mansarovara. He had his kingdom, King Mandatta. And his name is mentioned, ninth canto of Bhagavatam, in relation to the Rishi, Shobari Rishi, great mystic yogi. He had such power of breath control that he could stand under the water of the Yamuna and live there. It's amazing, living underwater. And he, of course, a long story between him and Garuda, cursing Garuda. And then that was an offense, Vaishnava Parad. Then he lost. When you make Vaishnava Parad, you lose your taste for your sadhana. When you make Vaishnava Parad, then you lose your attraction and your fixity of mind and your sadhana. It becomes difficult to do your Leela Smaran or your meditation. We see so many stories of that in the lives of the Vaishnavas, how their meditation would become disturbed, their absorption in Leela, or even the ability to enter a Leela in meditation or spurti would be disrupted and even halted by making an aparad to a Vaishnava, even knowingly or unknowingly. Shobari Rishi, he offended Garuda, and then he lost his fixity of mind. He could not fix his mind on his sadhana. He became distracted. His mind became subjected to vikshep. Vikshep means distraction. It's one of the symptoms of anishchita bhakti mentioned in Madhurya Kandambini. In other words, there's anartha nivritti, and that goes to nishta. So what is keeping us from nishta? So he lists six external obstacles to nishta and five internal obstacles. Laya, laziness, tendency to sleep. And then one of them is vikshep, distraction. The mind is going here, attracted here and there. Inability to keep the mind fixed on chanting of the holy name or one's service. He tries and he quits, or he can't follow through. Vikshep. So Sobhari Rishi, he, by this offense to Garuda, he was got the reaction of vikshep. He couldn't fix his mind in his meditation. He became absorbed externally in the external energy. He left his absorption and internal meditation on Paramatma, and he started to observe the world around him. And the world around him was the underworld, the underwater world, sub subaquatic, the aquatic world, and he saw fish swimming here and there and copulating, male and female fish mating. And when he observed this, he became disturbed, as our young Brahmin boy in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam. You all know this young chap. He was picking flowers for Shalagram Puja for his Brahminical father in the forest, and he saw a Sudra and Sudrani embracing and kissing and fondling and all these things that goes on. And he became attracted and lost his fixity of his mind on Vishnu. His name was Ajamil. And he fell down with a prostitute for 80 years and produced 10 children. So he really lost his focus. He really became distracted. So there's countless, numerous examples of avic shape in bhajan or sadhana. And that's what we see even in our contemporary world of Vaishnavas. If someone offends a Vaishnava, depending on the exaltation of that Vaishnava, the reaction will be immediate or in a few days or whatever. But generally we find that the devotee loses his taste. Oh, I don't want to go to Bhagavatam class. I don't feel like chanting. And he starts, the material energy starts looking good. Starts the glimmer and the shine that he forgot because of this fire of surrender and devotional absorption. He was really into it in the beginning. He was really attracted. He had beginner's enthusiasm. He learned to play the mridanga and kartals and sing a few bhajans and chant Hare Krishna and memorize a few verses, and he was engaged day and night in service. But then somehow his ego got the best of him. And he didn't realize deeply the principle of Trinadapi Sunichena. So then he started relegating the Vaishnavas, seeing them materialistically or externally, other ordinary people. And he started making mental offenses, diminishing the exaltation in his mind. And then pretty soon his mental offenses went to verbal offenses and started speaking ill behind the devotees' backs or even on their face and this and that. And alongside of those offenses, then he would find that his interest in bhakti was waning, because Bhakti Devi was not pleased with him, so she was not sprinkling his heart with devotional feelings. She was not sprinkling her heart with the satisfaction that comes from bhakti, because she doesn't like it when someone makes offense. It's called aparad, aradha. It's against radha. It's against the pleasure of Radharani and her expansion as Bhakti Devi. Bhakti Devi is Radharani's Devi. Bhakti, what is bhakti? Bhakti is Ladini Shakti and Samvit Shakti. This is bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti. So Radharani is very much there in bhakti. So this Rishi Shubhari, he became attracted, then he became disturbed by sex desire. So his tapabalam, all the power and strength he accumulated from hundreds of years underwater, meditating, it just got finished in a snap. One offense to a big, big Vaishnava, Paramparam Vaishnava Garuda. The Vishnu Vahan, carrier of Vishnu. And he left everything. He left the temple. He left his service. We hear about devotees say, "Where's so and so, Krishna Das?" Oh, he left. What show? Where'd he go? I don't know. He blooped, bloop, bloop. He went out. We don't see him. He went back somewhere. He was wandering in Los Angeles. He's in Maya, and not Guru Maya or Krishna Maya, but he's in Durga Maya, Mahamaya. And he's out surveying the field of external energy, looking for pleasure. Acha, oh, that's very unfortunate. We should pray for his quick return to the Vaishnava Sangha. it's not easy. So we feel unhappy if someone leaves our Sangha, our Krishna's service. So that's what happened to Shobari. He left the temple. a temple. He had an underwater temple. He was doing his service over there, meditating. He left the whole thing, just lock, stock, and barrel, walked away. Boom. He went high and dry. He was totally wet, and he went high and dry. Got on the beach, he dried off. And he said, look, I got to find some girls. Where can I find some girls? Just like when someone bloops, some boy, young boy bloops. First thing he thinks is, I have to get some money, and where can I find the girls? Any Russian girls around here? Or Indian girls, or whatever, wherever he is, or whatever he is, French, German, English. And somehow Maya offers him one, or two, or whatever. So, lucky Shobar, you just happened to come out of the water right next to a big palace. And he said, well, there must be some princesses in there. And that was the palace of King Mandata, who's mentioned here. King Mandata was living there. He's mentioned in the ninth canto. And here also in Vrindavan Mahimamrita. So the Shobar, he went knocking on the door and he said, listen, King, Mr. King, I'd like to marry, you know, your daughter, princess. He said, I don't mind, but can you get some new clothes? But anyway, he said, no, I want, you bring me one right now. So then he said, okay, I'll bring them all. So he had 50 available princesses. He was a fairly prolific king, Mandata. And they came out and he said, listen, girls, here's your, you know, a nice person here who wants to marry you. Anyone wants to Gandharva marriage, you can choose. Put the garland on your dream boat here and merge back in the Yamuna with your husband. So all the daughters said, no thanks, not today. No thank you. So then he could understand, being a yogi, he could understand that something was wrong. So he went back and he changed his clothes. And his body, in fact, also. And he came back looking like a dashing Prince Charming, the ideal prince. And then he knocked on the door and said, listen, I'm the same yogi, and I've got changed my clothes, and can you give me another chance? So then Mandata, he bought his daughters, and they all said, yeah, we want to marry this person. So then he took them all, 50 of them. So that King Mandata, who had that pastime, he's being glorified here, is that he, among so many other kings, have taken shelter of this great Vrindavan Dham. Having read about the glories and heard about the glories in the Puranas, he said, I must live there. Although I'm a king and I'm engaged in all the things that kings do, but I'm taking shelter of Vrindavan, so I'm sure that Brindamata will be pleased with me, and I'll serve the Vrijbasis with my wealth and opulence, and I'll feed them and honor them and give them land and so much support and protection by the blessings of the Vrijbasis that are here in Vrindavan and by the shelter of Vrindavan. I hope that I will become a great devotee. So this verse is glorifying the dust of Vrindavan. It is so valuable and so desirable that even kings, great kings that are glorified in the Bhagavatam, like King Mandata, they want to take shelter here. They do take shelter here. They live here and do their puja and their worship, and they carry on with their kingly lives. And this is a tradition. You can see graphic evidence of the presence of kings throughout Vrindavan, Brajamandal. If you go to Barsana or Nandagram or all over, you'll find the remains of the palaces of great kings, Bharatpur kings, Rajputs, Jats, etc., that they chose to live in this Vrindavan Dham because they were Vaishnav kings and worshippers of Radha and Krishna. And of course, they have all the wealth and they're conquering other provinces, but they were living here. You see in Barsana, when you go in the Prikamar, there's big, big palaces. In Manasi Ganga, big, big palaces. Keshigat, big, big palaces. These are not the rickshawwalas' homes. These are built by kings. They're 150 years old, 200 years old, still standing. Huge rooms and 24-inch, you know, 1 meter thick walls. The outer walls were 1 meter thick. So in the summer, when it was maybe, in those days it wasn't so hot, maybe it was 35 degrees outside. Inside the palace it would be 24. Natural AC. The sun, the heat never went through the wall. So these kings, and they were living here permanently. So this is the glories of the dust of Vrindavan. Even kings that people, usually kings, they want to die in the battlefield, to be elevated to Swarga, Swarga Mukti, by righteously dying for the religious purposes on the battlefield while fighting as a Kshatriya and Kshatriya Dharma. But, and they want that enjoyment of Swarga Sukh. Or they conquer other countries. They hear some country has vast gold reserves or all kinds of natural sandalwood or perfumes and silks and gems and jewels. So they want to sail in that place or go there and conquer those people and exploit all those jewels for their enjoyment. But even then, and kings do that, but there's many illustrious and famous, powerful, wealthy kings that chose to live in Vrindavan Dham. So Vrindavan is not just a place for widows. People say, oh, when you're a widow, you're about to die and you're simply a pile of bones and your teeth have fallen out and your eyes don't work and your ears are plugged with junk, you can't hear anything, and you have rickets and rheumatism and arthritis and spondylitis and all kinds of other itises, then it's time to go and do Braj Bhajan. enjoy the world. But we find quite to the contrary, the reality is something different than what our parents and mothers and fathers and so-called well-wishers try to tell us, that this is the place of kings and rishis and kings, and all the varnas are here, and all the ashramas are here. There's gurukulas here, and brahmacharis, all in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is all-encompassing. It is a place for everyone to live and to quote-unquote, work out their karmas, per se. It's not an exclusive domain reserved for the few crippled old men and women, the vanaprastis or the sannyasis and vairagi sadhus and bhavas, and those unfortunate widows. That's a misnomer. Vrindavan is for people that want to worship Radha and Krishna and understand the futility of their existence, and they're trying to transcend whatever bodily designation they're trapped in due to their prabdha karma. They may be kings. He has 50 daughters. How many queens he has? And he's not really doing too much, looks like, sense control in one sense, although he's not doing abortion, so in one sense he's a great yogi compared to nowadays. Oh, and what about Ambarish Maharaj? In Ambarish, there is a mountain, a small hillock in Mathura called Ambarish Tila. And Ambarish was nearby in Madhya Pradesh, just outside of UP. A vast kingdom there. He's in the ninth canto also. And he's another example. So ninth canto has a few examples of people that were living in Braj. And ninth canto also talks about Ramchandra. And who is Shatrughna? Have you heard of Shatrughna? Shatrughna is the brother of Ramachandra, I believe so. Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. Shatrughna, in Treta Yuga, he was living in Mathura. He was the king of Mathura 2 million years ago. So this is definitely the place of kings. Parikshit Maharaj also lived here. He had a farmhouse, let's see, a palace here, and he also was ruling India from the Delhi side, and he also had a place here. So they weren't exactly widows. But Ambarish Maharaj would come here and stay for 2 days, 4 days every month, observing Ekadasi, Dwadasi, Vrat. And he was a vast, powerful king, but he was doing Nirjal Ekadasi and then drinking only milk on Dwadasi with his queens to try to get the mercy of Radharani. He was observing all the nine limbs of devotion were observed by this great king Ambarish, and that's how he attained his devotional perfection. He was doing Shravanam, and he was doing Kirtanam, and he was doing Vishnu Smaranam and Padasevanam, and he was doing Big Archanam and everything. So this is a very This is an open place. This is a venue for everyone. So now we'll read. So this is the glories of just the dust. Even kings will take shelter here in this dust. This is Satyaka 4, verse 55. It explains how more glories of the dust here. There's about 11, 12 entries. The glories of the dust. Brajaraj Mahima, the glories of the sand and dust particles. So this particular point we're going to hear about the glories of the dust of Vrindavan. Swarga Devis, demigoddesses in heaven, they're nothing. Those great Ramboru and Urvasi and Tilottama and all these famous celestial nymphs and dancing girls of the heavenly planets that are so beautiful and famous for their different qualities of artistry and enchantment. They are nothing in comparison to one grain of dust in Vrindavan. That's how glorious is Vrindavan. This is the point he wants to make here. Nahi Vrindavana Bindam Yaham Indavapi Apyamudrishim Sukhatam Suchi Krita Suraganika Sukha Janika Te Jato Raja Kanika Ganika Kanika Raja Kanika. Raj means dust and Kanika means a particle of dust, a grain, a Kanika. Raja Kanika means just a particle, a grain of dust, like a speck of dust. O Vrindavan, I would not feel any happiness even if you transferred me to the moon. Oh, they were talking about moon landing even then. 500 years ago, they were talking about moon expeditions. even if you send me to the moon, I won't find any happiness. And there's lots of happiness on the moon. They're drinking somaras and are enjoying it. It's a heavenly planet. Because even a particle of your dust defeats the happiness derived from the association of heavenly damsels. Tuchi Krita Suraganika Sukatam Indav. Inda means Aham Indav Yamudrishim. Indav means the moon. Sukatam, that Sukh, that Chandra Sukh, that happiness of being in Chandra Lokas is nothing. It's Tuchi. Sukatam Tuchi, Tuchavat. Tuchav even sounds like that. The Sanskrit word tuchavat, tuchavat. Tuchavat means possessing the quality of insignificance, like Bhagavat or Bhagavan. Tuch, possessing the quality of tuch, tuchavat. Yanmadi krihamedi sukhami, you know, tuchavat, there's this one verse there. So he's saying that this Chandra Sukhatam Tuchi. You know, even you say that the word Tuchi, T-U-C-C-I, it sounds like it's like P-H-U. How do you spell that? P-H-E-W or something. Phew. Tuchavat. It's like, it's nothing. The heavenly, what are these heavenly? The Suraganika. The Suraganika means the girls, the Suraganika Sukha. So all those girls up there, the Suraganan, all those quality, all those different groups of the happiness, the Sukh, the Swarga Devi Sukh, Swarga Devi Sangha Sukh. If I associate with the Swarga Devis, that Ganika is like a Kanika. That Suraganika is like Braja Raja Kanika. Da 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 bingo, da 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 tingo. So it's Krita Suraganika, Jataraja Kanika. Krita Suraganika, Jataraja Kanika. Very beautiful. So this is, he's saying, what is this? That's why I'm saying this point is that Swarga Devis are nothing. They're nothing. Tuchava, nothing. In comparison, I'd rather kiss a grain of this dirt. I'd rather kiss the dirt of Vrindavan than kiss Urvasi. I'd rather roll lie on top of the dust of Vrindavan and lie on top of some devi. I'd rather, isn't it? I'd rather rub my fingers through the dust particles and dust particles of Vrindavan than touch the heavenly damsel, Swargadevi. Like when someone does Dandavat Prikrama. When they're doing Dandavat Prikrama, say Vrindavan or Govardhan, there's some nice Brajaraj there, and you stretch your, it's Dandavat, you're stretching your hands, extending your hands behind your head, and when you're lying face down, belly down in the dust, then you move your hands like this, and I, like this, and like this. And I saw one devotee I saw, as I was walking once on Vrindavan Prikrama, 1989 or so. It's like a little while back there, 21 years ago. I saw these symbols. I saw these drawings on the ground. I said, "What's somebody?" And there was a continuous chain of these drawings, all going one. They're just like someone was doing, you know, like kids dragging their toe in the sand and making some line or something. But they had some shape to them, and they were one after the other, and they were in a straight line going down. I was looking at them, and I said, "What is this? What is this design? And how is it being made? Is someone standing here with their feet and making this design?" I couldn't figure it out at first. And the design that what it would look like, it looked like a lotus bud. The bud of a lotus. And the bud of a lotus is pointed, and then it starts like this and kind of goes like that. It has a little bulbous part in the middle, like it looks like a teardrop sort of. Before lotus opens up, it looks sort of like a teardrop, something, you know, that's shaped, narrow and then goes fat and like that. So then I was thinking, how are they making this? So I was just thinking, how are they making it? It looks like a lotus, and it appears that someone's like wanting to offer a lotus garland of Brajaraj, a lotus garland, a garland of Brajaraj shaped like a lotus. Someone wants to offer this to Vrindavan Devi. Vrindadevi, because the Parikrama Marg goes all around Vrindavan, you know, the forest of Vrindavan, at least that area, the municipal Vrindavan, and that central area, the Rasastali and all that, all those temples. So I just had this thought, that what is the mentality, you know, analyzation, why? Philosophers always, they see something, what is it, what is it, and who is it, who did it, what is it, but why? And why? What are they? What is the purpose of this? So we think like this as we're walking in Parikrama, and then we saw this. It definitely looks like a lotus. Someone's now. How are they doing it? That was still how. The how part was a little mystifying. Then I saw someone lying doing dandavats, one devotee man, and then he was putting his hands like this, and he was rubbing his fingers through the Brajaraj, going like this. And then, you know, start, his two hands are together, joined with at the index fingers in front of his head, extended beyond his head. Then moving them like this, and then bringing them to his waist, and making him look, and then pushing himself up, and then walking around that, then standing at the next, marking at the next point, and lying one body length. And he was making this lotus design in the sand of Brajaraj by lying there, doing Dandavat Parikrama of the Vrindavan. Takes about 21 hours or so, 23 hours. You can do a few hours a day or at one time, whatever. Or just continuously if you're really strong. And then I wanted to confirm whether my assumption was correct. And it was a Western person. So then I said, "Excuse me, I'm extremely impressed with your Dandavat style. I've seen lots of hundreds of sadhus doing Dandavat Parikrama. We've also done ourselves. But it's obvious you're a very artistic sadhaka." and I said, "Are you making a design of lotus buds here with your hands as you're moving your hands on the Brajaraj to relish every touch of it and every particle of it before you stand up and lie down again and stand up and lie down and stand up and lie down? It seems that you're making lotus designs. Is this like a lotus garland?" And the person said, "Yes." I said, "So your mentality is that you're making as you're lying, you're not only offering your body as pada sevanam, serving the holy dham, becoming purified, worshipping the dust, etc., but you're also simultaneously doing two services. You're doing archanam. You're doing archanam and then you're doing pada sevanam. because you're offering this lotus garland to Vrindadevi. As you would sit in a temple room and you would take a needle and a thread and get some lotus buds and you would pierce the lotus bud and pull it through the center and then make another one and offer a garland of lotus buds to the Lord, Radhisham or Vrindadevi, Murti of Vrindadevi. So you can also, that day I learned that you can also offer a lotus garland made of sand. Like children, they go to the beach and they play in the sand. What do you have? Oh, this is a pie. It looks like it's a piece of mud. No, this is a cake, this is a cupcake, this is a pie. So they're playing in the sand, creating different things out of sand, castles, whatever. So this is how the particles of dust are what we want to rather touch and kiss the dust. And people kiss the dust of Vrindavan. If you stay here long enough, you see so many people when they offer dandavats, they kiss the Vrindavan. Have you seen? I've seen so many times. Eating a Brajaraj, taking a few grains in your mouth or putting some in your head, that's the obvious thing, or marking your forehead or putting on top of your head. But kissing also. So another translation we can read of that verse also, this how the Swarga Devis are nothing in comparison to one grain of sand. He's really mocking he's really putting this, all these great Devis are no better, they're not even as great. All these greatest worshipful Devis, Urvasi is one of the girlfriends of Indra. She dances and for Indra in his palace, right in front of him, and she tried to seduce Indra's son, Arjun. And he said, what is this? You're like my mother. She wasn't his mother, but you're like my mother because you're my father is your is your paramour or whatever. You know, you're like my stepmother or whatever. So then she said, Acha, you think I'm a Mataji? Kya kare? Hey, little boy, what are you talking about? You think I'm watch what I do now. I curse you to become, since you don't have any power, since you don't have any power to enjoy, I'm proposing you enjoy with me and you're rejecting me, then we'll take away, you'll find that you won't have any power for 1 year, you'll be a eunuch. And that's what happened. So this is these type of ladies that are up there, they're not even equal to a grain, not even a grain, not even a kanika. What to speak of Raj? Raj kanika. Kanika means a particle of a piece of sand. You have a grain of sand and then you cut it in half, or you cut it like you take a hair. You take a grain of sand and cut it into 10,000 parts. So one particle of a grain of sand is a kanika. So Prabhupada Saraswati Tunga Vidyasaki is really lambasting the Swarga Devis. Like, you girls ain't nothing. You don't even equal a grain of dust over here. Jow! Nothing. It's humorous and serious and quite amazing. Adbhuta Tattva. This Braja Tattva is Adbhuta. They say Dham Tattva, Shiva Tattva, Dham Tattva, and Guru Tattva are very Rahasya Tattva, very mysterious and difficult to understand. So we simply read, we accept, and we collapse in the dust of Vrindavan, and we pray for the mercy of this dust. There's another translation. Oh, Vrindavan, I do not find this kind of happiness even on Chandraloka. Your particles of dust dwarf the happiness of all the demigods. So that's quite an interesting translation, like almost like a different idea. So there's Sanskrit is something like a rubber band. You know a rubber band? You can stretch it 2 inches or 3 inches or 12 inches. It can really stretch a lot. So that depending on the development of your ras, development of your ras, the development of your bhav, your understanding of sahitya, literature, and kavi, and vyakaran, and all these things combined, you can really stretch and discover and unveil and unravel all kinds of meanings in the Sanskrit words and substantiate and prove your translation on the strength of your Sanskrit acumen. So he's just saying it. The happiness I find in Vrindavan, it's not even, you can't even find that in Chandraloka. That all that happiness of the demigods, which includes the Swarga Devis, it's nothing. All the happiness of being in Swarga or having the Swarga Devis with you or whatever. Being in Swarga means you're with the Swarga Devis or Swarga Devas or whatever. And it's the same basic idea, rephrased in a different way. That your particles of dust dwarf or defeat the happiness of all the demigods. Tomorrow we'll hear about Mahatma Duli. By the grace of the Lord, we'll have that class on Wednesday.